Oh, well, I thank everyone for coming, and Sophie, and remind me,
Eliana,
for arranging this. Is really not. It's very special, and it's really inspiring to see some of you come out on a weeknight. I'm sure you either had school today, have school tomorrow, don't have school tomorrow. A school night, a work night. I'm sure, Lisa, you'll be up probably at 3 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, and up to 1 o'clock in the morning. To see people coming and learn is inspiring always, and especially on Hanukkah. Really, the battle of Hanukkah was not a battle for our physical salvation. In fact, the Mefarshim want to know why on Purim is there an obligation to have a Suda. We celebrate with a feast on Purim, and while this is a feast on Hanukkah, there's no obligation to have a meal. We don't have a Sudas Hanukkah. We have Mesibas and Chagigas, and there's a lot of fun, but there's no like halachic obligation to have a Suda. So the classic explanation is because the salvation, the threat on Hanukkah was very different than on Purim. In Purim, it was a threat to our lives, to our physical bodies. Haman didn't care if we would keep halacha or not. It was the decree, Lahashmid, Laharug, La'abed, it's Kol Yehudim, to annihilate, to destroy, to kill all Jews. Hanukkah, that wasn't the decree. They wanted to make us impure. Lashkicha, we say in Al-Anisim, Lashkicham Torasecha, Ulaha'aviram, Mechuke Ritzonecha. They wanted us to stop keeping halacha, to stop learning. So the way to celebrate is by being engaged in more spiritual matters and through learning. So to be here tonight, to be learning together, is actually the greatest testament to our victory over the Yevanim. And I appreciate it. And we're coming, and hopefully we'll do this as often as you want. So I have a bad habit of getting into arguments, halachic arguments, Torah arguments, with people who end up being big rabbis. It's just happened a few times in my life. The first time this happened, soon after we got married, my wife is Shoshi, I don't know if anyone here has met her, some of you definitely have. So her friend got married in Chicago. Now, going to your spouse's friend's wedding when you're not at all friendly with her spouse or any of her spouse's friends is generally a miserable experience. Okay, this is also pre-smartphones. That's how old we are. It was pre-smartphones. And I don't remember if it was separate city or not, but that just makes it usually even worse. And nothing to do. And weddings out of town, usually the food's not as good as in town weddings. So like the smorgasbord was very schwach. There was no sushi. So I'm sitting there, I'm in Chicago, I don't have a smartphone, and it's my wife's like best friend. So she's the whole time the Bodekin and the dancing. And I don't know anyone. It was miserable. So they didn't really have such a smorgasbord. So it was out of town, so they had like hot dogs. So who eats hot dogs at a wedding? But what are you supposed to do? There's no like, I wasn't home, I know the food, you just got off the plane. So I decided, you can eat a hot dog. So I ate a hot dog, and at the chasm's tish, before I think it was right before the mothers came and broke the plate, this person gets up. He didn't look like a rabbi, he looked like a regular guy. You know, he had a beard on his face, but not like a rabbinic beard, whatever that means. And he said, we need to make a zimun. How many people do we have that washed? So he said, did you wash? I said, yeah, I washed, but I'm not going to bench. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm going to continue my meal after the chuppah. So how long is the chuppah? 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour. If you wash and continue your meal, even if you have an hour break, you don't have to bench and wash again. Sometimes if you're... I'm speaking to the teenagers here. If your parents have like a marathon meal and you're reading, you're learning, you're studying, you're hanging out, and then you come back to the table, it could be it was an hour break. You go to a school or shul dinner, right? Even at a wedding, in the middle of a meal, sometimes it's an hour break between eating. So you don't have to bench. So I said, I'm not going to bench. He says, you're supposed to bench. Don't tell me what to do. I'm not benching. I don't have to bench. He goes, you're doing the wrong thing. So I'm like, you're doing the wrong thing. And not like in a, maybe it was a little disrespectful, but it was in halacha. You know, the Gemara says that afil abu beno rav talmido, even a father and his child, a teacher and their student, mitchila, in the beginning they're oivim zemze, they're enemies. And in the end, they The Torah brings them together. So I say, he said, you did the wrong thing. I said, you did the wrong thing. Fine. We get to the chuppah, and I'm sitting there still miserable. And they call up a mechubed with the Misadar Kiddushin, Harav so-and-so. And it was this guy, who's a Rosh Yeshiva, big boy Yeshiva in Israel. And he's the one I had argued with. Years later, I used to teach at TABC. So he came in to interview the guys and give his presentation. So as he came in, I saw him. We gave each other a big hug, and we battled it out again. He still held that he was right, and I still held that I was right. And that was, you know, so to speak, argument battle number one with this big rabbi. Fast forward a lot of years, we had moved to Passaic. We were living in Passaic before we moved to Edison. And we moved in October or November. The house wasn't ready. I was living by my parents for a few months. And we moved to Passaic in like November. So Hanukkah was early that year. So it was like 2 or 3 weeks after we moved to Passaic. And I'm in the parking lot right off the main avenue at Rite Aid. And it's a cold day. And I'm schlepping all my stuff. And some guy gets out of his car. Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. I want to ask you a question. I'm like, I don't have the time for this. You know, you're carrying all the packages. It's cold. You don't want to hock around. He says, I don't understand. Hanukkah's coming. So in Al Nisim, why do we say Al HaMelchamos? Why are we thanking Hashem for the wars? So I was like, I don't know. Who's this Nudnik? He's bothering me. Why is he bothering me? So I kind of like mumbled something. He goes, no, but what do you think? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't know who it was. I thought it was a random guy. The fourth or fifth night of Hanukkah, I go to a mesiba at a shul called BTU. Base Torah Tfila, probably something like that. BTU is a big shul in Passaic. And the person who's the rabbi, Rabbi Zupnik, who's a big rabbi, he was the one that was bothering me, in the parking lot. Once I came here and became a rabbi, I understood where it was coming from. Rabbis all need to test out their material. Just like comedians find recreational people to tell jokes to. You have a drasha, you want to see if it's going to resonate. So I usually have my go-to people, I'll call on the phone. Usually I'm not stopping people in Costco or in the parking lot to ask them what they think of this. So this was the question he asked me, and I was like kind of brushing him off. It turns out it's this big, big rabbi, Rabbi Zupnik. And that question I want to talk about tonight, because I think it's a very strong question. We've heard this question?
Yeah.
You did. Okay, so you give us your... Well, hopefully there'll be something new. So why do we say Al HaMelchamos? Al HaNisim, Al Porkan, Al Gvuros, Al Chuos? So that itself, you could ask, why do we need so many words which basically mean the same thing? The miracles, the salvations, the whatever else. Those I understand, though. The Hanukkah is our victory. We're under attack, a religious attack, spiritual attack. We were saved. Okay, we found the Pach HaShem also. Why are we praising Hashem for the Melchamos? It seems to be very difficult. War is often, not often, always, it's tragic. Even when one side wins, there's casualties of war. There's often death and destruction. Even think about the most miraculous wars. The Six-Day War was the amount of people who were chozer b'tshuva after the Six-Day War because of the miracles. There are many, you know, unfortunately, rachman al-tzalan, dead Jewish kids, basically. You know, 18, 19-year-olds, the Yom Kippur War. We thank Hashem that there was war. If there's war, we thank Hashem that we win. We don't thank Hashem for war. Even in a personal battle, a person, Alo Aleinu, has cancer. So when they're cured, if they're cured, and they make a sudas hodah, they make a meal to thank Hashem, they don't thank Hashem for giving them cancer. They thank Hashem that they were healed. Maybe there are some aspect. We don't thank Hashem. I was at a Sudas Hodah this past Shabbos at JC Shabbaton, and the person whose house was at, the mother 20 years ago, was in an insane car accident. She basically, her car flipped over like off a cliff, like 30, crazy story. She came out totally unscathed. So she made a Sudas Hodah. She didn't thank Hashem for putting her in that crazy situation. She thanked Hashem for saving her. So why are we thanking Hashem for the Melchamos? We'd rather there be no war. And if there's no war, then no one would have died, and we would be fine. So why are we thanking? So this was that rabbi's question in the parking lot of Rite Aid, and I think it's a very, very strong question. In fact, any Sephardim here? Yeah. So do you say Al HaMelchamos?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? So it depends if you're using an Ashkenaz Siddur.
I usually don't mean Ashkenaz.
Right. So if you go to your shul or school tomorrow, if they have a, not nusach svar, an actual like svar, a dut mizrach siddur, they do not have milchamos. Their text, I wrote down, is al nisim aporkim al gvuros al chulos al miflos al hanechamos, the comfort, so to speak, another way of saying the victory. So they seem to get it right. Whoever wrote the al nisim and whoever wrote the version of the Svardi track took out the word milchamos, presumably for this very reason. It's difficult. We don't want there to be war, and we're not thankful for the fact. Are you pulling out a Svardi sitter?
I have a Svardi venture, but I can't.
Oh. It's actually very sensitive. In case Svardi would come, they could have. It's actually a very good idea.
No, one
of you. Lisa, you definitely have. You definitely thought that through. No.
Very veteran venture.
That is a good idea.
The truth is, my girls went to a Svardi high school, so we have, when they've had friends over, we did
it. Interesting. We gotta go to some Svardi weddings and bat mitzvahs and get the benchers. So anyways, the Svardim seem to get it right. They take out Hamul Chamos. Some, and this is quoted in a paper called the Anaf Yosef, which is a commentary on the Siddur, he takes out the word Vav. The letter Vav. So it's Al Nisim, Al Gvuros, Al Chuos, Al Hamilchamos. What does that change? We're not thanking Hashem for the war. If there's a Vav there, we're thanking Hashem for the miracles, for the victories, and for the war. That's a problem, based on what we're saying. Their text is Al Nisim, Val Purkan, Val Gvuros, Hamilchamos. Al Hamilchamos. Meaning, the victories from the war. The salvation from the war. We're not thanking Hashem for the war. We're thanking Hashem for saving us from the war, but it'd be better if there was a war. I think those are the two, so to speak, easier ways to get out of the problem, but they don't apply to any of us who are davening Ashkenaz, where we actually say Al Hamuchamos. So what's, how do we understand? We could go a little interactive. You have what who taught this to you in Berea?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't even remember who said it, you definitely don't remember what he said.
No, that's he brought it up, but it wasn't that question.
What was this today?
No,
probably a few days.
Well, obviously since Hanukkah. No, it's good to know because you never know like when you could start repeating drushes. I'm just starting my fourth year, so someone told me I'm definitely fine by now, but I haven't yet done it. There's always that one person who remembers it, and if he does, you tell him Chazar is good anyway. So. So they're
during Shabbat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
good. Oh, okay. That doesn't make sense.
So
I think they said during Shabbat because they were talking about like Bereshit and like how it's.
So there are a couple of approaches. I'd like to share two approaches with you and maybe develop them a little bit. One approach was said by the Panovich Rav. The Panovich Rav was of Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, who came over from Panovich in Europe to Israel right before the war. And he was very instrumental in rebuilding Torah in Eretz Israel and also taking care of many of the orphans who had survived. He had orphanage homes in Bnei Brak and elsewhere. Basically, he lost a lot of his family in the war. This became his new children, all these children he took in. So Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, the Panovich Rav, says the following idea. He says that what really was the battle, like we started with? The battle is not a physical war. It was L'Hashkicham Torah Secha, L'Havira Mechukei Ritznecha. They decreed against Shabbos, against Prismila, and against Rosh Chodesh. They didn't want us dead. They didn't. They wanted us to take over their value system. They wanted to be metame to get rid of any sense of Kedusha that we had. That was the war. Were we victorious? Were we victorious?
Yeah.
Can we... When will we be able to say that we were victorious?
When Mashiach
comes. Exactly. We can't say right now, without even looking around in the state of Judaism today, even if it was totally dynamic and rocking, we can't really know that we were victorious until Mashiach comes. To say that the battle, which is a battle of Tumah versus Kedusha, was won, you can't say that. It's way too early to say that. But what can we say? That we battled. The fact that we fought is, and we had the strength to fight, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the desire and the ability and the drive and the yearning to fight, is worthy of our being thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It would have been very easy, and there's been many times in our history where people weren't willing to fight. It would have been very easy to say, fine, what's Rosh Chodesh? Shabbos, it's not one of the big three, right? You don't have to give up your life for Shabbos. Maybe it's not worth fighting. Let's get along. They're going to take care of us. We could assimilate a little. The fact that Klal Yisrael, the fact that the Jewish people fought and fought hard, and we're willing to, you know, Giborim, Rabbim Bamiyatim, and Tumeim Batahorim, Giborim Biad Chalashim, the fact that Jewish people are outnumbered and we're going up against a mighty military, we're willing to fight for it, that's what we're thanking the Kadosh Baruch Hu for. We're not thanking Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Panovich Rav says, for the fact that we had a war. We don't want war when it's a physical war. But spiritual war, that for sure is a battle worth fighting. I'm sure many people here, probably great-grandparents at this point, came to this country and they had to fight. They had to fight to keep any semblance of Yiddishkeit alive. It was a real battle. We hear these stories about like what it was like when they came over in the early part of the 20th century. To me, that was always like these stories I didn't really believe or relate to. Recently, my mother's mother was alive in Florida. 2 years ago, we were at her apartment visiting her, my wife and I, and we saw on the wall, I had never seen this, a picture of like a tall, saintly-looking rabbi with a long beard with a wife and 5 daughters. I said to my grandmother, Safta, who happens to not be religious, who's that? Like, why do you have a random rabbi? I mean, I have a rabbi on my wall, but you should have a rabbi on your wall. Certainly not with his 5 daughters. He said that was my grandfather. I mean, that was her grandfather. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? But yeah, they came from Europe, I think, in 1905, 1907. They had 5 girls. His wife thought you can't live in this new country and hold on to your old European values. And basically, every Friday night, would give money to her 5 daughters to go to the movies. Every Friday, all those 5 girls became not religious. Most of their children intermarried. My mom, who's that person's great grandson, is my grandma's grandfather. So she was chosen for tshuva. She's a Baal Tshuva, and we're from today. Like, these stories are real. It was very hard for them to fight. They couldn't fight the poverty, the being made fun of, getting new jobs every Shabbos, and all these things we heard. It wasn't worth the fight. Today, it's so foreign to us, right? The only question is like, which sushi are we going to get for lunch? And it's crazy. It's a joke. You go to a Yankee game and get kosher food and Marv. There's not such a battle today. But the battle that's worth fighting is worth thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. It's an amazing story. I think it's a well-known story. It could be, you heard it. In Bergen-Belsen in 1944, there was a Rav, or a person, Rav Shmelka. I know every like story is Rav Shmelka, maybe. And he was in 1944. He was still alive in Bergen-Belsen, and he would try to be mechazik all the survivors who desperately needed chizuk. So it was the week before Hanukkah. All he was worried about was how are you light Hanukkah, how are you light Hanukkah, how are you light, which is itself crazy to think about how are you and. No one had any itza. They tried bribing this person and that person. They couldn't get oil. They couldn't get wicks. They couldn't get matches. They couldn't get anything. And they kind of resigned themselves that, okay, this is life. He's walking the night before Hanukkah. So Chav Daled Kislev, maybe it was Chav Gimel Kislev. And he's walking from one part of the concentration camp. And you can find his article on the Ishra Torah website, Hanukkah and Bergen-Belsen. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. He's walking from one side of the concentration camp to the other. One of his jobs was to remove of dead bodies from the barracks. So they were told that in the last barrack at the edge of the concentration camp, there were a few people that died from starvation or from the cold the night before. So his job was to walk and to bring those bodies to wherever, you know, they were going to bring them, Hashem Yirachem. So he was walking across the concentration camp, and he tripped on like a mound in the dirt. There was something protruding from the dirt, and he tripped over it. So he looked down, and he moved his foot around. He stuck his hand into, there was a hole in the pit, and he pulls that like a bag, it's wrapped in paper, and he opens it up, and it's a cup of congealed oil. He's like, what? Like, what's going on? He quickly looked around to make sure no one was watching. He stuck his hand into the hole, and there were 8 little wrappings with wicks in them, and a little glass cup and a wick. So he couldn't believe it. He thought he was like delirious. He was saying things. He quickly put it back because he figured someone buried it there for Hanukkah. He can't take it. He gets back to his barrack, and the next day he's asking everyone he sees, "Did you hide this? Did you bury this?" No one knew what it was. So the next night, or the next morning, under threat of being caught, he went back and he got the oil and he got the packages. And he came back, and that night they lit, and a lot of the survivors tell this story, they lit Hanukkah in Bergen-Belsen in 1944. He survived, and he comes to New York, and 3-4 years later, he goes to visit the Satmar Rebbe. The Satmar Rebbe, who was freed, escaped, that's a whole other story, from Bergen-Belsen in, I think, 1942, 1943, earlier in the war, 42. He escaped from, was freed, escaped from Bergen-Belsen, gets to America. So this Rebbe Shmuelka goes to visit the Satmar Rebbe. And they're catching up. They were friends, whatever, in Europe. So they're schmoozing. And the Satmar Rebbe says to him, it's been really bothering me. I don't know what happened. I was freed from Bergen-Belsen like 2 days before Hanukkah. I had hid a menorah in the ground. And I wonder, like, it always bothered me that no one ever got it. I wonder what happened to it. And Rebbe Shmuelka says, no, it was, I found it. And like they both started crying. Hysterical. And it's a very moving, powerful story. And the question I always had on this story, and you read a lot of these stories in the concentration camps and in the ghetto of Jews who risked their lives for menorah, is why the menorah? It's a mitzvah derabbanan. It's matzah on Pesach, you hear some crazy stories. Then I hear that a little bit more. Hanukkah is a mitzvah derabbanan. If you don't have oil, certainly you're putter. Even if it's a sakana and you have oil, you're exempt. So why are they risking their lives specifically for Hanukkah? And I think it's exactly what the Panovich Rav is saying. To go through what they went through, they needed to fight. They needed to fight for their own psyche. They needed to fight for their ability to continue to live. And they needed to fight very strongly so that their whole religious mindset wouldn't totally fall by the wayside. So it was specifically the menorah that they were very much moser nefesh. They very much sacrificed for the menorah so that Jews would be able to fight. And if you think about what the Jews did after the war to get to where we are today, it was all because of this ability and yearning and push to fight. And that's the Al HaMochamos. And I think it's very powerful. We're living in a world, quite frankly, where to survive or to thrive religiously, we have to fight. Now, that don't take this the wrong way. That doesn't mean angry and not peaceful, right? Derechah, derechah noam, the ways of Torah are supposed to be pleasant. But the messages that the world is throwing at us is not a spiritual, refined, uplifting, godly, kedusha environment type of messaging. And we need to be willing to fight, even if it's, again, fight not in a condescending, angry, bitter type of way, but to have our value system and be willing to stand up for it. Many people, when they're threatened, you can do whatever you want to me. I'm not breaking Shabbos, or I'm not going against my value system. But when we're not threatened, so it's much harder to feel like we need to fight. So that's, I think, a very powerful message of Hanukkah, as we say Al Nisim, to think, are we willing to Al HaMelchamos? Are we willing to stand up for what we believe in and to be strong with our convictions, even in the face of those who are sending us messages the other way? And that could be what the Panovich Rav of Kahaneman is saying, why we say Al HaMelchamos. I don't know if that's what Berta told you, but either way, that's one insight. I'll share one other answer that Reb Tzadok HaKohen, the Pre Tzadok, He says, and I'm going to read you one line in Hebrew, because I think it's very beautiful. He says, Ki ha-melchamos v'hatsaros, war and trouble, distress, pain, habos al-am Yisrael, which comes onto the Jewish people, mevi'im es ha-his'orus shalom, that's what awakens and inspires the nation. U'bekach menatzchim u'magiyim v'yeshuos v'nuchamos. Through that his'orus, inspiration, which is triggered by Tsar, pain, and milchama, and war, that's what allows us to have Yeshua, salvation, and the chamos, and comfort. Often, it's the pain which pushes a person forward. I'll never forget when, I think it was the summer when the three boys in Israel were killed. Was that 2014?
Yeah.
2014. So, we were away for a few days. I don't remember if it was Lancaster or somewhere in that Lancaster, Hershey Park area. And you saw all Jews getting together and davening. And there was like a real sense of achdus, and it didn't matter across. And you saw this, after the Pittsburgh attack. It didn't matter the hashkafa for the denomination. Jews were together. Now, it's a shame that we need a shooting and innocent people to die for Klal Yisrael to get a sense of achdus. And if everything is good in Klal Yisrael, then we hate each other. When things are bad, then all of a sudden we get along. But that's exactly the point. Whether it's right or wrong, fortunately or unfortunately, and it's unfortunately, we often need the tsar, the pain and the mulchama, to really wake us up. Often, people who have a scare to their life are now much more appreciative of the life that they had. Because that's the reality. Until absence makes the heart grow fonder, until we kind of see that it might not always be this way, that often people are very much moved and shaken by pain and distress. Twice in the last 6 years, I had surgery on my vocal cords. I had a polyp removed, and it was a crazy experience. We could have a share this another time. I had to go 8 days without saying one word. I challenge you to do one day. 8 days, not one word. No talking to my wife, my kids, davening, brachos. It was the first experience was actually kind of cool. I had to do it again the second time. That time was only 5 days. That was much harder. The first time, there was like this excitement that I was going to do this, and I was going to talk about it afterwards. Second time around, it was just totally miserable. After that, I appreciated the power of speech. And not just the negative in terms of Lashon Hara, but what a good word could do, like I never appreciated it before. Now, it's pathetic that I needed surgery on my vocal cord and was scared that I was never going to be able to talk again to get to that point. But that's the reality. Milchama, stress, distress, pain, discomfort often is what pushes us to grow and awakens us. So that, Reb Tzadok says, is Al HaMilchamos. As difficult as war, and when I say war, I don't just mean war, it means any battle that we have, as difficult as it is, we have to view it, and it's easier said than done, as an opportunity for growth. And that's another very powerful message about Hanukkah in general, that everything that happens is for our benefit from Hashem, whether we understand it or not. Everything is for our benefit. So Milchama, we look at it, it's horrible, it's terrible, you know, God is doing that to us, whatever that is, for our benefit, because we need that for our development and growth. Why would a person need diseases and pain and distress that we don't know? We have to believe that it comes from Hashem, and for the right reasons, but that's why we're thankful for Hashem, for the milchamos, and that is very powerful in terms of Hanukkah. And I'll end with this. There's a famous question of Hanukkah. I'm sure you've heard this talked about. Why is Hanukkah 8 days, right? It's already, you get nauseous when you hear this question. The miracle is really 7 days, because I don't know if we've heard this question. There's actually a sefer called Ner Lameya, which has 100 answers to this question. It was reprinted, now there are a couple hundred answers to this question. You could. The over-under how many times you'll hear this on Hanukkah is probably 10. Every speaker could. So I'll share with you one answer, which maybe you haven't heard before, which is beautiful. The Saba Mikelm, the Alter Mikelm, who was one of the student of Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement. So he quotes the Gemara. The Gemara says, I think it was Rabbi Chanina. I don't remember now. I think it's Rabbi Chanina. His daughter, he walked into his house on Erev Shabbos, and his daughter was very depressed because instead of oil You see this Gemara? There's vinegar. And vinegar doesn't burn. So she's depressed. I have to light candles for Shabbos. Can't miss candles for Shabbos. So he says, what are you worried about? Misha Amar L'Shem V'Yidlok, Yomar L'Chometz V'Yidlok. The one who tells the oil to burn will tell the vinegar to burn. Meaning, what are you worried about, Hashem? And of course, the story goes, she lit it and it burned. So the Alter Mikelm says, what? Who says oil should burn? Why does oil burn and apple juice doesn't? So you can tell me all the science in the world, but it's because of Kadosh Baruch Hu made it that way. So we don't view it that way because we're young. We see oil burning and we know that vinegar or apple juice doesn't burn. But he says that oil burning is also a miracle. But until you see vinegar burning, then is when you can start to realize that oil burning is also a miracle. So the last day of Hanukkah, or the first day, probably the last day, the miracle that we're celebrating is for oil burning. Because everything comes from Hashem. When we start to recognize that everything comes from Hashem, even nature, even the small things, so then when the tragedy, so to speak, the melchama happens, we could also realize that's from Hashem. It's for our benefit, as difficult as it is. We don't always understand why. But one day, it could be Lachar Me'ev Eshem Shana, we'll know why, but one day we'll recognize and understand that everything comes from Hashem, and it's for our benefit. And that's the milchama. So I'll end. It's a cute story, which is a true story. When Shoshi finished her second year of medical school, are you a doctor also?
My husband is.
Okay.
Does that count for anything?
Yeah. It's for me. I'm the president of the spouse club. So welcome to the club.
And my daughter's pre-med.
Right. That's why I thought maybe you were a doctor. So after second year of medical school, you take the boards, right? So this test is brutal. You basically, it's 2 years cumulative, everything in the first 2 years of medical school. They give you off, I think, what, 6 weeks to study, 4 weeks to study, you never remember. I think you gave enough 6 weeks to study. They study all day for 6 weeks. Most people start even before that. So Shoshi would go to the library at 8 o'clock in the morning. She'd come back at 6. She'd have dinner from 6 to 7 and be with her daughter, who was a toddler at the time. And then she'd go back from like 7 to 12. And this was 6 days a week. She didn't study on Shabbos. 6 days a week for 6 weeks all day. It's insane. So we didn't have any company those 6 weeks. It wasn't shack. It wasn't practical. So when the test was over, she had a lot of company. We didn't have any company 6 weeks. She wanted to cook. So she was cooking like crazy. And she got this recipe for like this... this ice cream, brownie, fudge, peanut butter, one of these crazy things, which took a very long time. She was all very excited. A family member gave her the recipe. She makes it Thursday night, and she asked me to try it. Of course, so I take a knife, I scrape it on the side, I taste it, and it's horrible. It tastes like rotten. So like, you'll learn this one day. Men don't really know how to handle those situations. We don't. Like, what am I supposed to say? So I was like, oh, they're probably allergic to peanut butter. And I'm like, oh, we'll just get like zombies melt away. It's better anyways. And don't worry about it. It's fine. It didn't do well for me. Fine. She went to sleep. She wakes up in the morning and she's like, I'll try it. She tries it and it's amazing. It's amazing. There was something that the person didn't tell her. It freezes overnight. There's people here maybe who cook know how this happened. Something with the eggs and whatever. Overnight, delicious in the morning. So I said to her at that time, this is life. Sometimes things happen and they stink. They're rotten. They're spoiled. Really, they're going to be good. Now, we don't always get to taste it the next morning that it's really good. Sometimes it takes a week, a month, a year. It might not taste good until after we pet. So she didn't want to hear my musher at that moment in time. But that's really life. Every milchama, in the words of Rabbi Tzadok, all the tzaros, haba'os al am Yisrael, all of the pain that we have, and many are in a lot of pain. We can't understand why Hashem decided that they need that pain, but the pain is for their best interest. That mevi'in es ha'his'orus. That brings the inspiration. That brings the growth. Hopefully we don't need that. Hopefully we'll be able to grab that his'orus without the tzaros and the milchamos. But the milchamos are also worth us thanking Kadosh Baruch Hu, because that's what enables us to grow, and that's what's for our benefit. And that's what Chanukah is. Chanukah is the ability to fight, the willingness to fight up for what we believe in, stand up for what our convictions are, and stay true to that, even in the face of adversity, and in the face of those who want us to not live up to those ideals. So we're thanking the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Mechamos, throughout Jewish history, Jews have fought for what they believed in. Our grandparents, great-grandparents, all the way back to the time of the Chashmonim, were willing to fight. And also the recognition that the Mechamos brings us to a state of His orus. Hopefully, we won't have any mechamos in either sense of the word. We won't have any adversity, people trying to bring us down, and certainly no tsaros. But if we do, we should be victorious in those mechamos and be able to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for it. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.